For 4 generations and looking forward to a 5th, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment.
And Tis the Law has the lead at the top of the stretch. It is Tis the Law in front with 3/16 of the finish. Tis the Law has a 4-length lead. He's left the others behind.
Live from the backstretch at historic Saratoga Racecourse, this is Racing Across America. Racing Across America is brought to you by Pinnell's Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922. 284 Jefferson Street, Saratoga. Just minutes from the track. The new Capital OTB wagering platform. Bet any place, anytime, with the new Capital OTB wagering platform. CapitalOTBBet.com, the premier wagering site in New York State. And the Clubhouse Racebook. Can't make it to the track? Make it to the Clubhouse Racebook. 711 Central Avenue, Albany.
Welcome to Racing Across America Saratoga Edition, the day before. Seth Merrill and Anthony Mormino. Anthony, good morning.
Good morning. How good is this?
It is good.
This is
I will alert people right early. Because I'm looking at our picture in the monitor here. We're a little dark. It is the shakeout day, and we're going to have to readjust our lights. Clearly, they're a little too far away.
Get some, a lot of moving parts here. We're, you know, trial run day. It's just, you know, working with pencils and erasers. We'll get it better viewing, but we are live on the backstretch, and we'll be here through Labor Day.
Randy Moss came and sat in from NBC a few years ago and said, the best set in all of horse racing television. I can't disagree.
Claire Court
behind us. Yeah, the horses are working out behind us, handicapper support. Now, that's a good idea, too. We should set the stage for what's coming up. Today, we're just kind of shaking things out a day before. But starting tomorrow, we go into our regular Saratoga schedule, 40 days here on the back, live on the backstretch. Always a lot of fun. I know from being on the front side, I get a lot of feedback from people. They enjoy it. Before I was here, sitting here, I was a fan. It's always great to hear. You know, I always say the biggest names in horse racing are literally a golf cart ride away.
Yes.
And we'll get many of them sitting here. But the game plan will be, as in previous years, 9 o'clock, we'll do the handicapper support, and we'll go, I think it's you and I, pretty much every day. So we're going to be going over the afternoon card, 9 o'clock in the morning. 10 o'clock on Wednesday's a new show with you, where should be a lot of fun. You're going to be going over weekly trends and pointing people maybe to some angles to pay attention to in the week ahead, looking back at the previous week and the season so far as the trends with jockeys and the pace scenarios and things. So that'll be Wednesday's.
Yes.
Thursday's Racing Across America. It'll be you and I on Thursday, so we'll kick that off tomorrow. I'm in at 10 on Friday and Saturday, and then back to loose on the lead on Sundays with Steve Bick and I, which is always
a lot
of fun.
You know what I don't understand about that show, though? Why doesn't he give you the ties on the first one?
Sometimes he does. Sometimes.
That makes the most sense to me, that he would deliver his box of ties to you on the first Sunday, then you could
It wouldn't shock me if he did the show.
Regular viewers with better lighting would know which day it's the Seth tie and which day it's the Steve Bick's box tie.
I will say, though,
I've never gotten it wrong.
I get a knock on my door the other night. It was late. I guess they were still delivering mail, because I opened the door and there was a box. It was like 10 o'clock at night. It was the United States Postal Service. So I guess they were, but I'm like, and I open it up, and it was from a fan of the radio show. And she said, you know, I always get a kick out of you guys talking about the ties.
How'd she get your address?
She knows Steve.
Oh, okay.
And so she had sent a couple of notes
before. Oh, and said I'd like to send him something. Okay. Because that'd be scarier than the Postal Service showing up at nighttime.
She said, hey, you know, I want you to maybe use a couple of these on Sundays and see what the reaction is from Vic. And she had, there was a group of some Thai. I'll be firing
Jesus,
them up.
Jesus, it's becoming a cult. Send Seth your ties. Jesus. How good is that?
Tune in Sunday. I may fire up one of those.
You got about $8 invested in ties the last 3 years.
I had to laugh out loud looking at the ties.
How many did she send you? 3, 6, 9? A lot? Like 20?
It was a lot. It was a lot of ties. And they were all great.
Were they like Steve Bickett?
Oh,
like really
no, they were up. They're up a notch
really?
From that. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah.
Now, did she... introduce yourself and leave a return address or something?
She had corresponded before. She works down at Country Life Farm down in Maryland. And I think Bic maybe had one of his horses there for breeding, so she knows Steve.
Oh, all right.
Yeah, so.
That's tremendous. Yeah, so you're flush. This is going to be like, I got to bring out the upper end ties then now.
So now people have
5 days
have
a week
to,
plus.
Have to tune in. But here we are the day before, and... You know, we'll talk a little bit about it in today's show, just kind of setting up the meet and whatnot and getting you prepared. But people have been, it happens every year. Belmont Stakes goes and the anticipation gets going for Saratoga. And, of course, at Capital OTV, folks will be in the various parlors and whatnot playing some Del Mar a little later in the evening as well. That's always fun. And people kind of anticipate. And there's been some good racing in the interim, obviously, the last few weeks. But maybe more importantly, a lot of the stakes we've looked at over the last few weeks where the divisions are really playing out well are going to play out well up here. A lot of these horses, and we'll take a look in a few minutes. Olympiad, Life is Good, Charge It, they're all coming up here after nice performances, amongst others. So stakes-wise, I think it's shaping up to be.
It's the way the game has transformed, which often, in Seth and my youth, was really a day-to-day or at the top level, Saturday to Saturday, has now become like how horse races on the internet in 1998 used to be, which is, here you go this day, jump forward. And that's where we've become now, where you had Belmont Stakes Day, and then you kind of leap forward to almost Independence Day, boom, and then they had a nice Stars and Stripes Day. But it's really, but Saratoga is actually the old school where it's day to day with the stakes action and such. And our colleague Brian Nadeau, I was working with him once and I made this statement. I think this is as true as possible. And Seth, this is going back at least 15 years ago with you and me. You talked about your consternation with how infrequently horses were running back then. And I said to Brian, I think we're on the precipice of Saratoga being the jump off point.
Yeah, you were ahead of the curve on there. Because at the time it was like, that.
And when boys at Toscanova did that in the hopeful, I don't think I have this story completely correct because I wasn't there, but when the media gathered around Richard Dutrow Jr. and they were talking about him, you know, you're thinking the hopeful winner, Autumn in New York, and he's like, I'll see you at the Breeders' Cup. It was, you know, and that was Uncle Mo's year, to give people a little, if they forgot, boys at Toscanova. That was sort of like, with Richard, you didn't know if he was kidding or not, but he wasn't kidding. But now, I really believe this, that Labor Day weekend, which was always great racing here, is really going to be even better, because I really think that so many trainers are going to use this as a jumping off. What did we hear from, did I hear this right, where Todd Pletcher and Charge It, after his 1 mile in the Dwyer, said he's going trained up to the Traverse? Did I hear that right?
I think that was a possibility, just
okay.
To see how the horse came
one
out.
One of the options in it, and that's really the world we live in. So the bottom line is, that's great for us. I mean, for us provincially, that's great.
Yeah.
That people are prepping for the Breeders' Cup in the summer at Saratoga.
And I think, again, stakes-wise, all the divisions in the early part of the year have really...
Especially those three-year-old colts.
The three-year-olds, the three-year-olds, not so much impressive, but I think the fact that they are undefined is going to play into a fun Jim Dandy and a fun...
Well, I'll tell you one thing. I was thinking about this because we look at it such... My goodness, if the Haskell and the Travers goes to other players... maybe Jack Christopher can win a championship, because I know you had Mike McAdam on after the Belmont, and I read Mike's column and I watched him with you, how he's thinking, you know, Jack Christopher is the best three-year-old, and he very well may be, but I was thinking, boy, that would be so rare. I know a couple years ago, didn't we have a three-year-old filly that won the three-year-old championship? She was the sprinter. Was it Covfefe? I don't know, but there was a three-year-old filly that took the very untraditional route to win a three-year-old championship. And I would even say that that's an even bigger mountain for colts to climb because of the weight of the Triple Crown.
This is the year.
But this is the year. Yeah. I mean, if you get, you know, a couple upsets here.
No, it's going to be fun. Let's talk a little bit about jockeys, trainers, and maybe some of the horses we can look at. And let's talk a little bit about the recently concluded Belmont meet, because I was rooting for Dylan Davis. He was sitting there in the lead the whole way, and then Irod Ortiz just, you know, plugged and plugged and plugged, and Irod wound up the Belmont meet as a winner by one. Dylan Davis, though, you can't take away. He had a fabulous meet. I saw you tweeted out, you know, thanks to all the support, because it was his best spring meet at Belmont. So he come, both of these guys come into Saratoga with a lot of momentum. I will remind people, though, and I think we have a graphic looking at the four jockeys, Irod Ortiz, Dylan Davis. Luis Saez was last year's champion here at Saratoga, so people shouldn't forget that. He and his agent, Kieran McLaughlin, had a great year up here last year. And the other jockey I put on the graphic that I think a lot of people are looking forward to here at Saratoga this year is Flavien Prat. So I think the jockey colony is always fun up here.
It is.
And I think it's going to be extra fun this year, given what we saw down at Belmont, and tossing Prat into the mix as well.
You know what's interesting to me? And it's so easy to look at. You have Irod Ortiz top left, then Dylan Davis top right. How differently the arc of their career is right now. I think Dylan Davis had about 70 to 100 different mounts. You know, kind of almost like a rank and file, bread and butter every day. Irod Ortiz, obviously, at the top of the game in, you know, dialed into some of the best barns, so with far fewer mounts can win more. But it shows you as really as opposite a way of getting it done, where Dylan Davis is kind of like Wednesday, Thursday, Friday, 1-9, and Irod Ortiz is Saturday the feature race. That's just obviously a simplistic synopsis of it, but I didn't look at it, but I'm suspecting their earnings were not nearly as close as their number of wins. I should have pulled that on you, but I could just.
No, I've got it right here.
You're better than the Boy Scouts of America.
Very interesting. Well, you made a great point. Irod Ortiz, $5.1 million. Dylan Davis, $3
million. There you go.
And they were one win apart.
Right. So there's no $4 million race at Naira that you get the $2 million purse to change it up. But it is exciting at Saratoga. I mean, I've heard Richard Migliori talk about it. I think I've heard Jerry Bailey. This seems to be the one meet ever in my lifetime on the Naira circuit that they talk about the jockey's title. I mean, they always give it away at the end of the Belmont. Somebody wins it, but you don't hear it talked about as much. And, of course, with the trainers, it's basically been a Chad and Todd fight for, what, a decade now?
Yeah,
15
I pulled up,
years?
Again, they have a trainer graphic as well, and I put Chad.
But I didn't want to get off the one thing.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
I think for all the people that come for Saratoga or the Weekend Warriors, Flavien Prat he's just so talented. As a guy who is accused on this network of having the West Coast bias, he was out in California, came east. I think he adapted very well. We have talked about
He finished fourth at the Belmont meet, by the way.
So we have talked about it so often about when big-time jockeys change colonies, and it doesn't usually go too well. You know, the list, you know, Angel Cordero, Jose Santos. I mean, it's a big mountain to climb, but I think Flavien Prat did it. I mean, it's not done too often, but he did it. And my point is that the fans
we saw Umberto Rispoli try to make the move, and it was tough. And he went back to California.
And the real key is that, you know, you have to get in a barn, you know, that you have, because then you can make a living and you can ride live horses, and other outfits can see how you do on live horses and say, hey, let me get that guy. But he was a known commodity, but that's usually not good enough. But he did it, and I think the fans that kind of extra dial it up for Saratoga, you know, will be seeing him on a regular basis for the first time.
He's going to be fun to watch, I think,
he's a talented boy. You know, we talk about...
Because it is a very tough colony up here, and he's brand new up here, so it's going to be fun to see how he does.
I think he'll do all right.
On the trainer side of things, going back again just the last few days to wrap up the Belmont spring meet, it wasn't much of a battle. The jockey title came down to the last day, but Chad Brown had 47 winners at Belmont Spring. Christophe Clement, 33, so it was a kind of a runaway. Todd Pletcher wound up third. That was at this year's Belmont meet. Going back to Saratoga last year, Chad Brown had 41. Todd Pletcher had 31, running 1-2. Mike Maker, third. Steve Asmussen, fourth. Christophe Clement, fifth. But I would expect the three guys you see on the screen right there to be, again, very prominent up here at Saratoga this season.
You know, the nature, you know, you think about how turf racing has really grown in America. Seth and I, people laugh when I tell them this, and Brian Addo, who's much younger than me, didn't realize this, but in the old days of like 76 through 82, you used to be able to go to the infield. And the way you went to the infield was they put wooden planks, they were painted green, over the turf court.
And so on the
there was
weekend,
no turf racing.
That's right.
And that's just not, you know, that would blow people's mind that there was 18 consecutive turf races. Chad Brown could you know, train a donkey. He's just great. But, boy, turf racing he's exceptional with. And turf racing is so much greater a player in our sport than it was two generations ago.
Well, we're seeing it with this nice three-year-old triple that they have with the Belmont Derby, the Saratoga Derby. We're seeing the big money, three-year-old turfers. I mean, it's a division that I really have gotten to like over the past four or five or 6 years. I think it starts early in the year and continues later, and almost every venue has at least one big three-year-old turf race, it looks seems like.
Well, I always remember South Florida Gulfstream's had a series for a while now. I mean, I go back to the Palm Beach 30 years ago with Sea Hero. But Southern California never really had one. And the reason is, I mean, the dirt racing, everyone's looking for a dirt horse in the spring and summer. But you're right, the Naira latched on to this idea. I know out in Chicago, didn't they have that triple, that the Secretariat, the Arlington Derby, you know, they tried to do a Midwest turf triple crown type thing. But it's huge now. I mean, it's gigantic. I think they couldn't put together a card too easily anymore without turf racing. And up here, the 5.5-furlong turf sprints, you know, about a decade of it, and people trainers love them.
People love to bet them, too. So, all right, why don't we head to a break? We'll come back and have some replays of some of the nice performances over the past few weeks that, as I say, will bode well for stakes action up here as well. So we'll preview maybe some of the horses we can look forward to seeing up here and more. All of that after this break as I'm not going to call this edition one, T-minus one.
What's funny is it's Wednesday, and from 1972 to 93 or 4, a Wednesday would be opening day for a lot of
I was looking through microfilm down at the Saratoga Library this past week.
I should take that back. It was Monday was opening day when I was a real little boy.
I was going to say, the notable thing looking at some of those old Saratogians, and not that long ago was the Monday racing. There would be a pink sheet on Monday.
Monday opening.
Racing on Monday.
We'll be right back.
All right, we'll be back in a moment. Stay tuned.
For four generations and looking forward to a fifth, Bruce Cerrone and his family have continued their 99-year tradition of delighting their faithful following with the finest authentic Italian recipes made with the freshest ingredients. Some things have changed in the last 99 years, but not Pinnell's commitment to the finest in Italian cuisine. Pinnell's Italian Restaurant, a Saratoga tradition since 1922, 284 Jefferson Street, just minutes from the track.
Capital OTB is now streaming live on Roku.
The RTN Racing Channel on Roku lets you watch OTB TV live through your Roku device or your Amazon Fire Stick, rather than being limited to computers and mobile devices, which means you can now watch OTB live wherever you are. Simply open Roku, scroll to find the RTN channel, then click on OTB TV. OTB TV on Roku. Try it now.
What if there was a way to become a better horse player? To have a better knowledge of the game? To be more successful? What if there were a way to take what you've learned, what you know, and make better decisions, better choices? In horse racing, knowledge is a powerful tool. Race results and replays, past performances and live streaming, wagering from all your digital devices. Capital OTB. Become a better horse player.
Welcome back. Racing Across America on this Wednesday, the day before. And if you weren't tuned in for the top of the show and you're going, man, they look dark. Yes, we do.
Temporary.
And that's why we're kind of doing a little shakeout show today, just to kick things off. We will move the lights a little closer and get in gear for tomorrow's show, certainly. So tune in tomorrow when we officially kick off the season. 9 a.m. Handicapper Support, 10 a.m. Racing Across America. That'll be the game plan throughout the season. I mentioned your show, if you want to tout that a little bit as well, the Wednesday show, where you'll be hitting on some trends and any other topics on Wednesdays.
On Wednesday's Racing Across America, obviously, it commences the new week with the Monday, Tuesday dark. We're going to look back. We're going to review. We're going to preview. And I've talked, not too often, but some people, I love spreadsheets. I like data input. I believe in trends.
Information is king in horse racing.
It is. And sometimes, especially for me, who doesn't necessarily like the favorite very often, that sometimes you might have been racing on a disadvantage and maybe today you get it turned around. My point is what you saw in the last race or three races back, won't play out. So we're going to be looking at trends. We're going to be reviewing the stakes races, proving we can take a little look towards Del Mar because I can't get too far away from that. And a big change in our lifetime was, generally speaking, Del Mar would open the Wednesday before Saratoga in my 20s. And now you have Saratoga opening up like 8 days before Del Mar. And they have gotten in sync with closing on Labor Day. Del Mar used to run until 2 days after Labor Day. They would run the Del Mar Futurity and get out of town. So we're going to look at, trends. We're going to look at, basically stakes action, review, preview for folks. We'll have, I'll try to walk people through statistics. I love them. I know not everybody does, but we're going to parse it out a little bit more maybe than just...
Even if somebody's into numbers and statistics or not, to be able to take advantage of a guy like you who's charting it out and
doing
something. This is what happened last week. This is something that stood out last week. Maybe pay attention to it going forward. That kind of stuff, as I say, is always valuable.
And I mean, there's just sometimes for me, when you're caught up in the three-dimensional pursuit of the day, you see people like Seth, you get to talking, you refocus for like 6-8 minutes, you watch the race. Guys like Seth and I are also dialed into the replay, etc. But then when I put it in two-dimension on paper or on a screen, patterns and trends and things just start happening that you're like, well, that's pretty obvious. Like, we'll talk about it a little bit tomorrow, but he's the most in-depth, but I follow about any other race. I just give you a quick one that if you're going to hear it again tomorrow if you watch Handicapper's Report. But at Woodbine this year, they finally started two-year-old racing around May 1st. First five of them, Mark Cassie won four of them, all with the chalk. So that's just the type of thing. I'm not so sure I've ever seen that in my life before. Where a trainer, not only that, but everyone was bet. He's got a couple that are coming back at Saratoga tomorrow. But you're just like, Jesus, Mark Cassie all of a sudden, looks like Steve Asmussen, with two-year-olds where he's just shooting fish in a barrel. And then because of other things, like I like to say about taking the stats of Dylan Davis and Irad Ortiz as an example farther from me. we follow the game daily. So you kind of know that the purse is going to be different. But what I would also give the people is that the return on investment for the winners is going to be dramatically different, because Irad Ortiz is a very well-known commodity, riding for the Chad Brown outfit very often. Although Chad Brown has double-digit winners, and we'll talk about that type of stuff also. But my point is, it's very exciting to be at the racetrack, and a lot of stuff goes on. And then in the quiet of my house, punching into a computer, you start to see stuff. And for me, it's the less obvious things that you...
Oh, that's you exactly know, what you want.
That is what...
The stuff that's not on the page that'll help people, you know, find a price.
You know, liking Chad Brown and the Diana is a very valid opinion, and I might be on board with you, but there might be some financially more fruitful other opinions.
Yeah, so that'll be Wednesdays, and you can look
Looking forward to it.
Yeah, it should
be
fun.
It's a lot of fun.
Yeah. Let's get back into it. I said we'll take a look at some of the horses. And the first horse we're going to look at kind of ties into the topic we were doing before with trainers, because I think this is going to be a lot of fun, a trainer to watch as well. But let's pull up the Kentucky Oaks. We're going to watch Secret Oath win. Secret Oath's going to be the number one horse. Nest, number four, runs second. Desert Dawn runs third. Echo Zulu runs fourth in here. But Secret Oath, Luis Saez was on board for the win in the Kentucky Oaks. She subsequently came out and tried the Preakness, ran okay to run fourth against the boys in the Preakness, but she's likely to come back and face the girls again on July 23rd here in the Coaching Club American Oaks. And again, I bring this up because she's a nice horse that's going to be up here early in the stakes season, that's going to be part of that nice contingent of stakes runners that I said are going to add excitement to the stakes calendar here. But as I mentioned, as the addition of having a trainer that's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Back at Saratoga, there was an article, Bloodhorse mentioned, Dwayne Lucas, 16 stalls over on the Oklahoma side of things. So he's going to be a presence here at the meet, the venerable Wayne Lucas. And I think, as I say, Secret Oath is going to be fun to watch in the CCA Oaks, but just going to be fun to see Wayne Lucas back at Saratoga with a string.
When I was 21 years of age, that might have been the number he needed just for the Gene Klein horses. I've said it on the air a couple of times. I mean, I love Coach. I mean, first off, he changed the game.
Yes.
The thinking of the game, and I almost always hold those type of athletes or in this case trainers in high reverence, because it happens infrequently. He was willing to, you know, you're not a big baseball fan, but Dick Williams, the old great manager, once said, I don't play by the book because I never met the man that wrote the book, you know. And Wayne was like, why can't Phillies beat boys on a regular basis? He's just, if she's faster, she's gonna win the race. And he just really, in my opinion, maybe I was too young, so maybe this is inaccurate, but really turned the game on its head.
Absolutely.
Dwayne off the plane. He was running these it was
multiple
great
strings
at various
tracks, which led to the fact that a lot of the big trainers we appreciate today came under the tutelage of Wayne Lucas. Todd Pletcher, Kieran, Dallas Stewart.
And, remember this, folks. I've said this when I was doing a bankroll on Preakness Day a couple years ago when Wayne got Oxbow to the winning circle. I said, think about this. In all those records they talk about in sports, you know, Wayne Lucas has won a Preakness in four different decades.
It's
pretty darn good. I mean, I know Woody won five in a row, but to be in the game and to win in 1980, you know, with Codex, and win in the 21st century with Oxbow, and he's great for the media, which makes him great for the fans, because he's such a, you know, just let him talk, and he's been, Thoroughbreds, boy, it's got to be 50 years now. And by the way, just a quick side note, because I will be right in line, and I was completing my freshman year at USC, and I was, if you've ever seen me drive my car, you could probably figure out I'm a big Seattle Slough fan. The Land of Lucy book, I think, comes out today, which was not his first terrific horse. He had Terlingua, but it was his first great horse. And I often tell people, her silks, white polka dots on a forest green background, people don't recognize them. those were Wayne's silks. Those were Wayne Lucas silks. He had other owners, but she ran in Wayne's silks. I think that book comes out today.
And there's a signing I should mention on the...
If she comes in, Mary Perdue or something?
Yeah, there's a sign. Going to be a signing.
Can,
I believe
you can
a
take
Dark
the
Horse.
20 minutes off, and I will just
Dark Horse downtown, and also at the museum, I believe as well. You can check online for that. You know, type in.
I think LandaLucyBook.com gets you directly. I mean, it's,
but I will mention also our friends at Dark Horse Mercantile, and Impressions of Saratoga. They're sponsoring the Dark Horse Play of the Day, so the handicappers support every
awesome.
Day. There'll be the DePaula Play of the Day, which is the normal Play of the Day we've always done. But we're also going to have kind of a dark horse, a horse that might float under the radar, but overperform, add some value. So
yes.
We'll have
one
you pick some.
Odds.
I'll pick a few, and we'll feature one of those every day. And thanks to our friends down at Dark Horse and Impressions of Saratoga. If you've never been to either spot and you're downtown, they're both right on Broadway. You can browse around in both of them for a long time and have a lot of fun.
Which for the next 6 weeks might be one of the great streets in America.
Yeah, no question about it.
I told you a story last year, right? I told you, you don't have to remember. It's not a big thing. It's a big thing to me. But last year, the first time ever, our son's birthday fell during racing, and I didn't go to the track. I was in the town, and we went to Cantina, which I thought was phenomenal. And I saw all these people on Broadway, and I'm thinking, like, I'm trying to check my phone without my wife, what's running at, you know, as I was like, you know, there's racing going on. But my point is, I had never personally realized how the streets are flooded while the racing is going on. I had never been a participant, but, you know.
I do remember that story now, because I at the time, I mean, said, you're in my complete brain spot, because I think there will be a small handful, 2 or 3 days during the meet, where for some reason I have to go to the bank or something. And so the middle of the day, the middle of the racing afternoon, yeah, I'm downtown. And I'm thinking the same thing. Wait, all these people don't realize the races are going.
It's amazing. But that's indicative of the town and how much people enjoy it up here. And it's all part of the mix that made this place really grow from about 1978.
I have said for a long time, what makes Saratoga the track so special is really outside the fence, that the community is so into horse racing. You go out to dinner and the people at the next table are talking about the exacta they had or the double they're going to play tomorrow. And you know,
I'll tell you a quick story. The trainer will remain unnamed, but they put it best for me, and this was a long time ago. He says, you know, if you go out in public and you're in the greater New York City area, and somebody says, hey, there's such and such. He goes, you might have to duck. He goes, but in Saratoga, you always know it's going to be a good moment. Yeah. People see you in the bookstore or something like, hey, such and such. They're just like, they loved that part of it. I know they're dislodged from their house and everything, but they're like, you come up here and people just really upbeat and are like happy to see you and not generally worried about a bad beat or something.
Some of them may be dislodged from their house. I think over the last 10, 20 years, certainly, with that the Oklahoma season now being April to essentially November, I think a lot of the folks have homes up here now and spend a lot of time up here in what would be considered the off season because they have horses here.
Yeah.
Speaking of the horses, let's take a look at some of those performances over the past couple of weeks that, as I say, are going to play into first really big performance just last week, the holiday weekend, the Stephen Foster Olympiad for Bill Mott, one of those four-year-olds. A four-year-old contingent this year is just playing into that handicap division. But Olympiad, the number three, wins, comes up with a 1-11 buyer in the victory in the Foster. But also notable, American Revolution ran second. And after the dud in his seasonal debut, I thought that was a nice performance. American Revolution is the number two. But Olympiad comes in to Saratoga, aiming potentially at the Whitney off of this nice effort. He is now 4-for-4. He's now, 5-for-5 this season. He has a current five-race triple-digit buyer streak going as well. And so I think Olympiad is going to, as I say, add to that number of stakes runners that are going to make the season very exciting.
Yeah. I'll say one thing. We have so much going on here as we get prepared. And very often, you know, we show stretch runs, etc. That's the resultant, etc. In that particular race, though, to me, it goes back to the part that I've said for years. If you've ever spent a day in the grandstand here, which I highly recommend socially and you know, relaxing, etc. But as the horses come into the stretch, basically, section T will stand up, and it's kind of like the wave. They'll all stand up. And I've always said that, to me, the most important, exciting part of the race is the first 100 yards, not the last 100 yards. Last 100 yards can often be just a march to the finish line. In that race, American Revolution, now running into the first turn, got squeezed out of a position that I think he wanted very much. And the jock did the right thing, had to give up the run into the first turn and really pull back. In my trip notes, that's always LP, lost position, which is a big thing to me. And I think that dramatically altered what you saw in the stretch. And what he did in the stretch by getting in contact with, you know, very good horse. And trust me, the Kentucky Derby winner was not in that group for me. Was a fantastic effort. But to me, for American Revolution, go back, watch this race. Watch the first quarter mile. And then if you don't want to watch the whole race, just ingrain it to after that trouble, how well he runs, as you said, a nice uptick. I give it like a double uptick, and I'm going to be very excited to see him come back.
Yeah, Mandaloon was disappointing running fourth in there. I think Brad Cox was disappointed.
And I would say an ambivalent, indifferent fourth. He was ranged up on the outside all the way up the backstretch and just had nothing. Now, I'll say this. As a guy who liked Mandaloon in the Kentucky Derby, he is not a horse you can count on to win races.
Yeah.
He is not built that way so far in his career.
But Olympiad, looking forward to him in the Whitney. Also in the Whitney, in what looks like could be one of the fireworks races of the meet, Life Is Good, potentially headed to the Whitney, according to Todd Pletcher. And we're going to go back again. Last weekend, the Nehru down at Belmont, Life Is Good is going to be the number one horse here, beating another very good Mott handicap runner in Speaker's Corner. Speaker's Corner just winds up a chart margin of 5 lengths behind. Life Is Good, a 112 buyer figure here, coming out of a fourth place finish in the Dubai World Cup. And Todd Pletcher said that it was a mile and a quarter in the Dubai World Cup. And Todd Pletcher said, I don't think it was the distance. I just don't think he fit the track over in Dubai. So a nice rebound. He's clearly a two-turn horse. He didn't get the two turns down at Belmont, because that race we just looked at was 7 furlongs. But in the Pegasus World Cup, he ran a big winning race at a mile and an eighth down there. So back to two turns potentially in the Whitney. And Todd thinks, you know, the mile and a quarter wasn't the obstacle in the Dubai World Cup. So potentially the game plan is the Breeders' Cup Classic. But this will be a nice showdown if we get both of these. Olympiad versus Life Is Good.
In my life now, I've been to Speaker's Corner. It is in Hyde Park, London.
Oh, okay. All right. How was the trip?
There's been three places in my life now that my immediate reaction was, I'll be back. L.A., Maui, and London. Now, we got lucky. There was only rain for about an hour. It got warm. It was with the family, London, and everything. But Speaker's Corner, and I'm thinking Godolphin, which is a worldwide group, I've not met the Sheikh, but I would presume that it's a part of Hyde Park, where we also got to hear Adele sing on our last full night. Our son made the whole trip. He figured his father had planned right. But Speaker's Corner is in Hyde Park, London, and yours truly's been there. But Life Is Good is certainly extremely talented. Be very interesting to see the next two or three races in his
unfortunately career. It looks like we're not going to see Flightline. That would be the match. But this is still, if Olympiad and Life Is Good match up, it's going to be fun. On the three-year-old side, obviously the highlight up at Saratoga is the Travers every year. And so on the three-year-old side of things, we saw a horse that I think emerged as a potential serious player in the second half of the year. And again, a year that the first half didn't really define who has the stranglehold on the division, with three different winners of the Triple Crown races. Mo Donegal going to the sidelines. We'll see if Epicenter can get back in the conversation. But jumping squarely into the conversation last weekend with a win in the Dwyer, it was number one Charge It from Todd Pletcher. John Velasquez was on board. He winds up with a 111 buyer figure. It looks like it here. I will note, there was a horse from Chad Brown called Nabokov that was lightly raced Chad Brown and Peter Brandt.
Stopped running at three and a half furlong.
He doesn't show up here. And other than that, this frankly wasn't much of a field. So we have to maybe have Chargett validate what we saw. But with the buyer, you have to think it was a legitimate performance. He's going to be fun to watch on the three-year-old side up here.
Well, I don't want to say funny, but what's about Chargett was when he was coming out of the Florida series and into the Derby, most people were saying he was like a race or two behind. And, you know, when the Travers comes, you know, they could really foresee down the line with him. And the rarity is it may actually occur that he has turned into his own. One thing I always mention about dominating winning margins, and this includes Secretariat. I know that's hallowed ground, but I think paid up subscriber won by like 30 lengths of grade two. It's usually about behind you didn't run too well. For example, I think Charger ran, 134.67? I don't know. It doesn't matter, but it's 134 and change, right?
Yeah, you would have 134.67.
So 23 lengths in the old school of thought would be 4+ seconds. So you're talking almost 139 for the mile in the Dwyer for the runner-up. That's really good.
The rest of the field
my
was
part with Chargett isn't the 23 lengths. It's the development. And it was a huge step forward that most people foresaw. And
you kind of alluded to it for folks who don't remember the beginning of the career. Started in January, ran second in a maiden special for Todd Pletcher down at Gulfstream. A nice-looking maiden breaker on February 12th. And then you have a good three-year-old, and you're up against the clock. So they go right to the Florida Derby
on
the maiden breaker. Yeah, well, and winds up a good second to White Abario.
And I want to say something. I am not inferring that these owners pushed or anything. What I'm saying is in the big picture in life.
Yeah, you have a good three-year-old.
Sometimes trainers don't want to go because they see it from a professional standpoint about development, but the owners who are paying the bills have a different process,
You know, how many opportunities do you get?
And
so, yeah.
One.
And so, so he kind of tossed in a dud in the Kentucky Derby, and you and I have been around long enough to have looked at PPs. And know that oftentimes you look down the PPs of a very good horse and the lone dud on the PPs will be the Kentucky Derby. And I think that may be the case with Chargett as the career goes forward.
You know, and it will be intriguing to me if he does train up to the race.
All right, let's take one more break. And when we come back, we'll just kind of wrap things up and maybe give you I have some of the highlights. And also I brought a list of the giveaways that will be happening up here at Saratoga this year. So we'll come back and wrap it up right after this. Stay tuned.
The lineup, they're all set now for the Juvenile Fillies Turf. 14 of them across the track. Set on their way. And of the dance on the outside. Broke a little sideways with Bro KK, but meanwhile it's going to be stopped. But running on now, and Somali Lemonade's got eight to make up. They come to the top of the lane. Stop Shopping Maria's got a lot left. Stop Shopping Maria goes on. Sweet Cat is right there. Hard not to like. Royal Body is running on. Past the eighth ball, they come. Stop Shopping Maria for the run. Still under a hand ride as they come to the 16th. Stephanie's Kitten coming out late. Yes, Stephanie's Kitten coming fast. Stephanie's Kitten, Stop Shopping Maria. Stephanie's Kitten's water.
The chances broke smartly, but so did Terra from the Cape. On the inside, Sky Lantern the Grey going well. If he can get through, Sky Lantern the Grey looking for somewhere to run. Wide open. It's Terra from the Cape hanging on. Terra from the Cape tries to go all the way on the outside. Now here comes Flotilla in the light blue. Flotilla is absolutely flying. Watch the chances in there too, but Flotilla has gone right on by, and Flotilla is coming home to score. Flotilla has won it just about two in the end. It'll be Watch the Chances, Summer of Fun, coming on to finish there.
Welcome back to Racing Across America. T-minus one, as it were, our shakeout day. Seth Merrill, Anthony Mormino, and Anthony did want to. I have some notes here, and as I said, we'll get to maybe some of the events that are coming up and talk about the giveaways. But I did make a note here, and I think on day one we have to mention something brand new at the track this year that I'm excited about, and we'll get launched tomorrow in stakes action, the 1 mile shoot. I am very excited to see that.
The Wilson Shoot 2.0.
Yes. Dave Grenick tweeted out yesterday they launched some horses out of the starting gate for a little trial run.
Does it surprise you that on the week of the meet they still haven't determined how many runners they're going to have? Well, I tell you, but a true blue Wilson Shoe, which I do not remember this, but I read an article, was dismantled in 1972. And if you remember, 20 years after that, imagine this. 20 years after 72 was 30 years ago. They had the 1 mile races, not from the Wilson Shoe. But this kind of looks like Ellis Park. And I've talked about the 1 mile races at Ellis Park where they start a perpendicular line to the finish line. And I think the fact of the matter, Seth, is trainers on dirt, you have a gap between 7 furlongs and 9 furlongs. And they want something in between. So we're going to try this True Blue Wilson Shoot 2.0 1 mile races. I'm guessing field size limit 8-10 at the absolute max.
And it's going to be interesting to see as it starts to play out
on opening day
what's going to happen to the outside horses and how much you're.
Well, the Wilton?
The Wilton. Yeah, race, I believe, number 7.
Yeah,
tomorrow.
It's a field of 9 that they drew. And we're going to watch and see. I mean, I know for the trainers, like I said, 7 and 9 furlongs in today's day and age is a big gap for them. And the other thing, not only that, it's for how long the Saratoga meet is on the calendar.
Yes.
It's not like the old days, they'd be like, all right, 4 weeks. If you don't follow it, in Southern California, when they go to Los Al for a little while, it has to be a very short meet because there's no turf racing.
And you mentioned the distance, but that also is going to play out a lot, off the turf races. There weren't the options to get closer.
And I think that's another thing they haven't decided, because I've heard some people say they want the 2-year-old races on the turf, which are 1 mile and 16. They still want them to revert back to the 7 furlongs. And I think with the babies, that's a good idea.
Probably,
as
yeah.
they're learning the yeah. game, give them a long run before the turn.
Yeah. Giveaways this year, and I think we have a graphic showing. There's a picnic blanket coming up on July 29th, so you can look forward to that. And that's both of the top two pictures of the picnic blanket. It folds up.
Okay.
There's a long sleeve T-shirt on August 19th, and there's a mini umbrella on September 2nd. So you can look for those the giveaway items coming up again, July 29th, August 19th. September 2nd, there are your giveaways for this year, which I know are very popular with everybody. I think, at least one of each of those.
I have only loved two giveaways, and one of them, this shows you how I'm the anti-marketing guy. One of them was the all-time white elephant, worst
that,
one, which shocks me because Saratoga and its history. And they were beautiful, and this goes back to 1991 when we had 5 Sundays and they didn't give them away the day after the Travers. They had this beautiful glass that my wife has run through the dishwasher. You can no longer see the silks, but they had the winners of the Whitney, Alabama, Travers, and the hopeful. And then on the other side had a list of like the previous 50 winners. It was the white elephant. I love them. And the other one was, I thought this was not only a great giveaway for a kid who grew up in the 70s, but a great idea, was the bobblehead doll of the previous year's Saratoga jockey winner. I was like, that is tremendous. I actually went out of my way to collect those. And obviously that idea didn't work. But I love that.
Yeah, I'd like both of those as well.
And then when he said Luis Saez earlier, I'm like, my man should have his bobblehead day. They used to give it away on the second day of the meet. And I was like, because that was something, it like was a reward that young people would come. Oh, it's Luis Saez. Why is it Luis Saez? Well, he won the jockey title last year. And they used to put the silks of, I think, the winning Naira owner for the year on it. And I was like, and that went kaputs.
The caps are hit and miss. Some caps are nice, some caps I haven't.
I agree with that 100%. Yeah. The caps are sometimes they're just beautiful. The other times you're like, maybe not.
Yeah, exactly.
Shelf.
But that gives you a little lineup on what's coming up here on the network and some of the thoughts on Saratoga. But
that's,
as I say, day T minus one, as it were. We'll be back in tomorrow morning, 9 a.m. for the handicapper support. You and me also, 10 o'clock for Racing Across America. I know we have Mike Welch from the Racing Forum scheduled to sit in with us tomorrow as well, and much, much more. So you can tune in on that. Any last thoughts?
Well, I hope the weather is like it was today, the entire meet. I will say that weather has been overall pretty good for the Wild. Once again, when I do the spreadsheets and the inclement weather and such, but when you're wearing a jacket and it's early in the morning, and I've always said this about the handicapping sport, which has been the first slot for so long at OTB at 9, I was rarely ever warm. But the few times I've done the 10 o'clock thing, as we've done today, you get to like 10:30, 10:45 on a really warm day, you start to feel it. But it's beautiful over there. They have the new paddock bar. It's you know, I've said this before. They've been running here since the Civil War, folks. It is so beautiful. It's such a joy. I think the weather is supposed to be nice tomorrow. It's such a great time. And in my lifetime, the fact that I had opening day's card done about 36 hours ago, and I'm going to start working on Friday's card, is a great relief. Makes it easier for us, and I can't wait. I see what I'm like. I might be about 137 pounds at the end of the meet, but looking forward to it.
I can only hope.
I know. I know. Good point. I didn't realize that. You have any last thoughts?
I'm with you. This is usual
for you. You're our James Brown anyways. Me, I got to somehow go from, you know, 3-furlong workouts to a 7-furlong debut over here. So it's Seth and I, handicap report each day, and then...
But I'm with you. I'm really looking forward to it. But maybe more importantly, I know everybody else is, because I know people must recognize you from the shows as well. And over the past, really about the past month, I'm in the supermarket or the gas station or whatever. People are
I get the supermarket every time.
Can't wait.
I get a couple of friends who work different areas in the market that I use almost 1.5 times a day for 15 years, and they're like, they'll tell me how my tie looks or everything. They are dialed in. I've said this. One of the great things around here is there are fans out there that if they could get over the nerves of doing TV, could just slide right in. This is probably, along with Lexington, the most knowledgeable group.
Absolutely.
They might be weekend warriors or
when you're standing on the front side after a big performance and the horse comes back and people are standing up.
These people are dialed in, and we appreciate it, and I can't wait, partner.
I will toss out one comment. I appreciate the fact that you go to the supermarket 1.5 times a day, because I thought that was only me. Most people,
well,
I think.
Why do you do it as a bachelor?
Most people have that. I'm going for the week. And
no,
that's why, because I'm a bachelor. It's like, what do I want for dinner tonight?
Okay.
I go to the supermarket.
I'm that reason. And my wife's the person you're talking about. I'm like, I want fresh things. She's like, you go every day. I go, it's not like I have to drive 3 miles. It's right on the corner. I said, but yes, I said, there have been days if I have to make my bottle deposit, I go three times. But yes. We're good.
That.
We're good.
I think we are good.
We are good.
So we'll wrap it up. And again, we'll see you tomorrow morning to officially kick things off.
22 hours, baby.
At 9 a.m. for the Handicappers Bar. Thanks for tuning in today. We'll see you tomorrow.
You're watching OTB TV, a service of Capital Off-Track Betting.